I don't know when I started doing it, but for as long as I can remember, I kind of eat hamburgers in a weird way. And so I thought I would do a little bit. We had some friends over and we were eating them. And sure enough, I watched again how I eat a hamburger. And then I'm like, I got to make sure and bring. So I brought, this is my leftover hamburger from last night. I actually ate a whole one, but then I ate a partial hamburger. So I want you to take a look at this thing. This is how I eat a hamburger. So if you can imagine, you know, a whole bun around here, usually what I do is I circle the edge of the burger, right? Oh, it's good. Yeah, Cole, it's fine. This is delicious. I eat all this stuff. I should have practiced preaching while chewing food. That's probably a bad idea. But this is, and so if I were going to complete it, I would actually finish this edge. Now, why would I finish this edge? Because it's kind of the gross part, I think, of the hamburger, right? Like if I take a bite right into there, look at, here, look at it that way. If I take a bite right there, look at all this extra bun that I'm going to get. And it's going to be bun with maybe a dribble of ketchup or mustard. It's really not that good, but it's very satisfying once I get, and then I get the edge. And then when I get into the middle, what do I get? Oh, I know, it's satisfying. I love the middle of the burger, and because what do I get there? First of all, I get not the edge of the hamburger that's maybe a little bit overcooked, but I get like the middle that's a little bit more rare. And then I actually get the lettuce and the tomato and the cheese. And if there's bacon, I would definitely put the, you know, that's, it's all right. And then when you get about two or three bites right in the middle. This is the most satisfying part of the burger. That's Lamentations. I've just illustrated Lamentations for you. The good stuff is in the middle. I know that if you have been here with us for the past 2 weeks, it's been rough. It is hard material. And in Hebrew poetry, they often put the best stuff in the middle. That's why it's kind of important we're going to be spending time here. Especially because Lamentations chapter 3 also starts breaking the mold. Chapter 1 and chapter 2 follow a very specific pattern, a Hebrew poetry device called having an acrostic, which is every verse starts with the next letter of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph, Beth, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Wav, Zion, Het, Tav, Yod, and it goes through the 22 letters. Each verse starts with it. That's why chapter 1 has 22 verses, chapter 2 has 22 verses, and then chapter 3 breaks the mold. And if you take a look at it, it has 66 verses. And what it is that each verse then starts with the next letter of the alphabet, but it repeats it twice before it goes on. So it's going to go Aleph, 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 Beth, 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 Gimel, 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 Daleth, 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 Hey, 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 Wow, 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 Yod, Yod, Yod. And it goes through all of that. So that's why it almost triples it up. And the idea behind that, especially because it goes triple, that means there's going to be something that's going to be center, right? If we have three, we have something in the middle. We have five chapters. We're going to be in the middle. When we hit the middle stuff of this chapter, this is where the poet is going. And there's going to be a really important lesson that I think is also going to come through it, especially because we are now going to hear words of desperation, unlike other words that were there in chapters 1 and 2. Chapters 1 and 2 were pretty desperate. And I feel bad. I remember typing in Lamentations chapter 3 sermon. I was just curious like how often it's preached, because Lamentations 1 and 2, not preached very much. There's not a lot of stuff out there. Lamentations chapter 3, oh my gosh, there are tons of material. Tons of it. Tons of people preach on Lamentations chapter 3, but they usually focus on the middle part of the thing. And then they just kind of give the context like, oh, the people are sad because the people were taken off into exile. And you don't really get the feeling. If you really want the import of the middle of chapter 3, you really need to read chapter 1, chapter 2, and the first half of chapter 3. And you're going to be coming away from this going, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can handle this. But isn't that what we face in life? Isn't this real life? When we face something that is so horrific and so bad? And I'm going to expand my application, because I really do think it's important. We know that the people that were carried off into Babylonian exile were guilty of some of the most heinous sins around. But I think this also really does help for those people that maybe it's not that you sinned, it's someone else sinned against you. Or you've just experienced massive tragedy. The death of someone, maybe a child. Or you've experienced sexual assault. Or you've experienced something against you from society. And it hurts. I think all of that is really what the lamenter is trying to point to. And if you have ever been in a position where I don't know if I can get up the next day, you're now in the mind of the lamenter. You are hurting, you are struggling, and you have pain. And so the first 20 verses are really hard to listen to. It ramps up. And let's see what you feel about it. I am the man who has seen affliction by the rod of his wrath. He has driven me away and made me walk in darkness rather than light. Indeed, he has turned his hand against me again and again all day long. He has made my skin and my flesh grow old. He has broken my bones. He has besieged me and surrounded me with bitterness and hardship. He has made me dwell in darkness like those long dead. He has walled me in so I cannot escape. He has weighed me down with chains. Even when I call out or cry for help, he shuts out my prayer. He has barred my way with blocks of stone. He has made my paths crooked. Like a bear lying in wait, like a lion in hiding, he dragged me from the path and mangled me and left me without help. He drew his bow and made me the target for his arrows. He pierced my heart with arrows from his quiver. I became the laughingstock of all my people. They mock me in song all day long. He has filled me with bitter herbs and sated me with gall. He has broken my teeth with gravel. He has trampled me in the dust. I have been deprived of peace. I have forgotten what prosperity is. So I say, my splendor is gone, and all that I had hoped from the Lord. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I will remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Again, the imagery, you know, continues to change throughout that whole thing. He talks about at the beginning how God's rod is against me, as such a stark contrast to Psalm 23, where his rod and his staff, they comfort me. Now I'm being beaten by it. He gives the imagery of a bear or a lion lying in wait and being mangled by it. You get this imagery of being fallen to the ground and eating gravel that breaks your teeth, like your head is on the ground and someone comes by and steps on your face and just grinds your teeth on rock. And you can't breathe. And then you feel like you are just simply got a target on your body and I'm being shot through with arrows. And I think the lamenter is wrong in one aspect, because he's ascribing everything in terms of it's God's actions. And we've talked about this, the nuance that I think most American Christians come to, which is the nuance of God actually doing something or God allowing it. For a Hebrew person, it was all the same. God allowing it is the same as God doing it. But you're going to find that the lamenter is going to ultimately change their direction. It's tough because when you are in the midst of pain and suffering and heartache and sorrow, you really got to cry out to someone or something. And often then we turn our attention and we blame God. And that's okay. The lamenter is giving us a pattern, saying that when we cry out to God, how important that cry is. Recently, I started watching, I don't know why I'm fascinated with cults. I think because I'm going to try to start one, so I was trying to see like best practices of, no? But I'm always fascinated because you have someone who's usually the charismatic leader that everyone is drawn to, and then, you know, there's always this difficulty of like someone saying something that is so outlandish, but then people still believe it and people still buy into it. And I was watching one, and it was about a guy who was a dad, and he started a cult with his family. It was, Papa Pilgrim. Papa Pilgrim is, Papa Pilgrim be crazy. Like, if you watch this, this guy went nuts. And one of the things that he wanted to have enough kids to get to, because 7 times 3, like, there's some holy number, 21 kids. And, and he was brutal. He regularly abused and beat his children so that they would stay in submission. And, like, you would see these, they would show the pictures of, like, some of these adult male children, and you're like, man, adult male children, y'all could take Papa Pilgrim down. Papa Pilgrim ain't that, you know, strong, but he had this hold over him. But then it finally came that one of the adult female children needed to get away. And she's crying out. And throughout all this indoctrination, the thing that he's indoctrinating them with is the Bible. That's what makes it like even more heinous, because he'll use certain passages of scripture but then simply ignore other passages of scripture. And it was horrible. And I remember where the woman, because they're interviewing this woman who was trying to get away, and you know, if she finally planned her escape, because that's the name of the show is How I Escaped My Cult. And she, Papa Pilgrim, was headed back into town on the snowmobile because there was only one way in or out of their house, was on this one singular path with a snowmobile. And so Papa Pilgrim goes in, and so she's like, that's it, I'm going to get up. And she grabs one of her sisters, and they start driving. And her snowmobile runs out of gas. Right? And you know what she says? I think God hates me. And I'm thinking to myself, I would think the same exact thing. And she's like, I don't know, because she knew if Papa Pilgrim finds her on the path with the snowmobile, she's dead. Like, that, it's going to be as good as dead. He had almost actually killed her previous to that. He'd given her such a beating, which actually is what caused the male children to leave. She came in, Papa Pilgrim made her wear a ski mask to hide just how visibly beaten she was. And this is all true story, yeah. And the brother said, take off the mask. She took it off, and they said, we couldn't even recognize her. And they said, that's it, we're out. And I'm like, man, that's it, we're out. How about one of the three of you go take out Papa Pilgrim? But they were also terrified. So they took us. So she had been beaten and was at the point of death at one point. So she knows if Papa Pilgrim finds her on the thing, he's going to finish the job. But she runs out of gas, and it's her and her younger sister, and she's like, I think God hates me. Isn't that how you're feeling as you're reading this? Does it resonate with you? Has there ever been a time that you've been in a position like this? I think all of us at some point or another have. If you haven't, man, I'm really sorry to tell you this, you will. It's one of these really dark places where we feel like Psalm 88, I've been tossed into a pit, and wave after wave of God's wrath is just pouring over me. And there eventually comes a point, I mean, after reading chapter 1, after reading chapter 2, after reading the first 20 verses of chapter 3, you got to think to yourself, is this ever going to end? Yes, it does. That's what's so beautiful about these next verses. This person feeling attacked by God, but then coming to the realization that it's not God. And also realizing that feeling like you're trapped is not God, and that God is still there while you're going through this stuff. These verses, if you've been walking, I encourage you, go back, read Lamentations 1, Lamentations 2, and then the first, I know some of you are like, nope, not going to do it. First half of 3, because then you hit these words, and they are like healing. It's this joy and this remembrance overtakes. Let's read this. Verse 21. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. I mean, there's been no hope this whole time. But he's like, I got to remember something, and what I remember is going to bring me hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I think it's a song too. Should we sing that today at some point? I think we should. That we should make it our first communion song. Yeah. It's a great song. You're going to be really amazed at the story of that song and how this person wrote that song. It's very fascinating. If you want to, in verse 22, because of the Lord's great love, again, it's really important when you get some of these Hebrew words. This is one of the most important Hebrew word in all of Scripture, and it's God's chesed. Chesed. We say love, but that just, it doesn't work, right? I love pizza. I love the Raiders, right? That's not the same as God's chesed, H-E-S-E-D. But the H is hard like you're hawking a loogie. Chesed. Chesed. Yeah. That's why people don't sit in the front no matter how many candy bars I give them. They're always going to be in the spit zone. Yeah. God's great chesed. It is new every morning. Does God's chesed run out? Even when you are at the end of your rope, even when it is the darkest time of your life, even when you're like, I can't, even maybe it's your stupid sin. Maybe it was your stupid sin that got you into the place where you're at. Or maybe it was someone else's stupid sin that got you in this place. And you're thinking, I think God's run out. And especially at the nighttime, does anyone enjoy being depressed at night? No, you are alone with your demons. They come out, they harass you, they harangue you. You can't get any good sleep, and you're thinking to yourself, is there any end to this? And the answer is always yes, because it doesn't matter what's going to happen the next day. The sun will rise, and God's mercies are going to be new that morning, brand new. For you and me, even this lament, or even in the midst of it, even in the darkness of it. And that's what, again, makes it so amazing. It's in the middle of the story. It's in the middle of the chapter. It's in the middle verses. In the middle, God is in the middle. Mercy is there in the middle. That's what makes it so incredible. And he goes on, verse 25, the Lord is good to those whose hope is in him, to the one who seeks him. It is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man to bear the yoke while he is young. Let him sit alone in silence, for the Lord has laid it on him. Let him bury his face in the dust. There may yet be hope. Let him offer his cheek to one who would strike him, and let him be filled with disgrace. And then you start thinking, what is this in reference to? you all of a sudden start hearing these overtones of Jesus offering his cheek to be struck, filled with disgrace, becoming sin incarnate so that we could have forgiveness. Jesus knows suffering and pain and heartache and loss. God knows this too. Very, very well attuned to it. So when we are in the midst of our suffering, God is suffering with us. More importantly, God is suffering for us. He does this so that we might not be lost forever in pain and suffering and heartache and damnation. He takes it so we can have forgiveness. So I know that one of the things that we do when we cry out, like, why is God against me? Why is God fighting me? Or maybe even worse, why is God not even here? Where is he? And we're looking around and we're saying these prayers, but it feels like it hits the ceiling of blackness and doesn't even get outside of our own four walls. We can't think anymore because we're being tortured at night. Our head hurts because of the amount of tears that we've wept, and we can't weep anymore. And we try to wonder, where is God? The answer is God is in the middle. He's there. He is there with you. Because look at verses 31, 32, and 33. Again, what great words. For men are not cast off by the Lord forever. Though he brings grief, he will show compassion. So great is his unfailing love, for he does not willingly bring affliction or grief to the children of men. We're starting to see a turn, starting to see that, yes, maybe our sin has brought us to this, or other people's sin has brought this to us, and God has allowed this, but God is not that active agent just destroying us. Instead, he is there loving us and caring for us in the middle of it. Doesn't matter how it feels. What matters is what is true. And if even you say, I feel that God has left me, God has abandoned me, God has forsaken me, God has forgotten me, the answer is he has not. He is still there. But here's the problem. Even though the lamenter has rediscovered God, even though he has reconnected back and has this hope and has this his eyes looking towards God, saying, I know where my help is coming from. It's coming from God. The problem is you're still in pain. Have you ever had someone who maybe died and you are in vast amounts of pain, but you know God, you know God is there, you know God gives you comfort, you know God saves, but there is still this massive valley of the shadow of death that you still have to walk through. I really do wish that it would be something where we say, oh God, please help us, and instantaneously all the pain and suffering is gone and taken away. But it's not. Sometimes when you're in the middle of the grief, you know what's really hard? Is the stuff that's going to be afterwards. You already know in your head what is true, but it's still hard to still trust in that. But that's how things begin. Going back to this young woman who's trapped with Papa Pilgrim, she's like, God hates me. I don't know what to do. And they started to hear a snowmobile coming. And they're like, well, this is it. And they found, because they'd grabbed a bunch of stuff to take with them to get out, one of the things that they packed was some white sheets. It had been snowing. There's no way. And it's now much darker. And so they run in, they cover up the snowmobile, and they get off the beaten path. And guess what they find? An abandoned snowmobile with tons of gas in it. Had God abandoned her? Had God left her? Now, it doesn't mean, when she talks about the stuff and the pain that she's still having, I think to myself, yeah, that's exactly right. Anytime someone has passed away in my family, I grieve and I hurt, and then it's really tough because I'm still in the middle of my life. I'm still in the middle of the pain, and yet I know the answer. God is there, but I still have to walk through that. So God is in the middle. Jesus is in the middle. He's with you. It's his grace. That best part is there, and that's what's going to get you through the rest of it. Listen to how the tone changes, especially starting verse 34. To crush underfoot all prisoners in the land, to deny a man his rights before the Most High God, to deprive a man of justice, would not the Lord see such things? Who can speak and have it happened if the Lord has not decreed it? Is it not from the mouth of the Most High God that both calamities and good things should come? Sounds a lot like Job. Whether in good times or in bad, God comforts me, God afflicts me. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Why should any living man complain when punished for his sins? Let us examine our ways and test them. And let us return to the Lord. Let us lift up our hearts and our hands to God in heaven and say, we have sinned and rebelled, and you have not forgiven. It's a struggle sometimes when we're in the midst of it. We often ask for forgiveness, and we just don't feel forgiven, right? You don't feel like God cares for you. You don't think that God is you're worthy enough for God's grace. You still have this self-loathing. You still hate yourself. You're still in the middle. You're still in the grief. You're still in the heartache. But things are changing. You have covered yourself with anger and pursued us. You have slain without pity. You have covered yourself with the clouds so that no prayer can get through. You have made us scum and refuse among the nations. All our enemies have opened their mouths wide against us. We have suffered terrors and pitfalls, ruin and destruction. Streams of tears flow from my eyes because my people are destroyed. My eyes will flow unceasingly without relief until the Lord looks down from heaven and sees. What I see brings grief to my soul because of all the women of my city. Those who were my enemies without cause hunted me like a bird. They tried to end my life in a pit and throw stones at me. The waters closed over my head, and I thought I was about to be cut off. Do you hear the change of the language? It's no longer this blaming of God, but realizing there's evil and sin and nastiness that's in the world, and those things are antithetical to God and his people. And so we turn back to them. We turn to them. We're crying out, God, please hear us, even in the midst of this. We have sinned. We have suffered. Yes. But God says, I'm not going to just suffer with you. I'm going to suffer for you, and I'm going to give you Jesus. And what did he do on verse 55? I called on your name, O Lord, from the depths of the pit. You heard my plea. Do not close your ears to my cry for relief. You came near when I called you, and you said, do not fear. O Lord, you took up my case. You redeemed my life. You have seen, O Lord, the wrong done to me. Uphold my cause. You have seen the depth of their vengeance, all the plots against me. O Lord, you have heard their insults, all their plots against me, what my enemies whisper and mutter against me all day long. Look at them, sitting or standing. They mock me in their songs. Pay them back for what they deserve, O Lord, for what their hands have done. Put a veil over their hearts, and may your curse be on them. Pursue them in anger and destroy them from under the heavens of the earth. It's this change of, Lord, you know what? I suffer, I sinned, I've done wrong, but Lord, your grace is still going to be there because great is your faithfulness. Your chesed is new every morning, and it redeems me and it pulls me out, and it causes me to now have hope in the middle of my pain. Going back to, again, that young woman with Papa Pilgrim, How many of you might have completely and utterly rejected Christianity altogether because of what just happened to you? Like, I'd be like, yeah, I don't know if I like this whole Christian thing. I think it's a bunch of garbage. And which is why it was so strange, because she talks about how once she finally did, she got out because there was that other snowmobile, and Papa Pilgrim had gone up the thing, and so they found the snowmobile, they started up, and they went into town, and they knew exactly where to go because their brothers had said they were going to be with their, like a distant relative of some sort, and they knew they were going to go there. And they said that when she went to church, she went to church! My goodness! And you know what she said she heard? She heard about a different God, a God who loves and a God who cares. And so when she tells the story, she says, now I know, even in the middle of all that stuff, God was still with me. He still protected me. He made a way for me with that snowmobile when I thought for sure I was done. I was gone. And I think that's amazing when we are in the midst of our despair to have hope. God does those things. He makes a way. You probably saw it on Facebook. Christmas time, I took Heather to an Amy Grant concert. Do you remember that? Yeah, gotta love Amy Grant. For those of you that don't know Amy Grant, she was one of the pioneers, her along with Michael W. Smith and a bunch of others that brought in kind of mainstream Christianity into music and then into pop culture. And so I went there, and I knew about half the song, so I think I was doing pretty good, personally. Like, hey, I got this. I know that song. A bunch of them I didn't. They were old, and but Heather's sitting there singing along, and she had told everyone around, like, I'm really sorry. I'm going to be singing really loud and being obnoxious while I'm here. And they're like, that's okay. So are we. And so it was really cute. But it was interesting because she sang a song that I had forgotten about, and it was a song that I remember when it came out, it was gutsy. She decided to tackle a subject that up until that point really hadn't been tackled, especially with mainstream Christians, especially then in song. She had talked about how she knew these two women who were part of her life who had been sexually abused and raped when they were kids. So she wrote a song about that. Now, how do you bring God into the midst of something so depraved and horrific as that? But she did. Here's that song. It's called Ask Me by Amy Grant, if you want to listen to it. She actually sang it. It was rather incredible. I see her as a little girl hiding in her room. She takes another bath and she sprays her mama's perfume to try to wipe away the scent he left behind. But it haunts her mind. You see, she's his little rag, nothing more than just a waif. And he's mopping up his need. She is tired and afraid. Maybe she'll find a way through these awful years to disappear. Ask me if I think there's a God in the heavens. Where did he go in the middle of her shame? Ask me if I think there's a God up in the heavens. I see no mercy. And no one down here is naming names. Sounds like chapter 1, 2, the first part of 3. Now she's looking in the mirror at a lovely woman face. No more frightened little girl, like she's gone without a trace. Still, she leaves the light burning in the hall. It's hard to sleep at all. Still, she crawls up in her bed, acting quiet as a mouse. Deep inside, she's listening for a creaking in the house. But no one's left to harm her. She's finally safe and sound. There's a peace she's found. Ask her how she knows there's a God up in the heavens. Where did he go in the middle of her shame? Ask her how she knows there's a God up in the heavens. She said his mercy is bringing her life again. And then it gets to this bridge. He's in the middle of her pain, in the middle of her shame. Mercy brings life. He's in the middle. mercies in the middle. May you experience mercy in the middle of whatever is going on with you. And may you know that God's mercies are new every morning, and may that give you the hope to keep going even though you're still in the middle of it. And may you always know that Jesus didn't just suffer with you. He isn't just standing beside you, but he suffered for you to bring you life, hope, peace, and comfort. Let's pray.